Welcome to Visible by Numbers with your host, Allison Bachman.
Hello, and welcome to Visible by Numbers, being broadcast on beautiful BBS Radio, the number one radio station on the Internet. And this is your host, Allison, and thanks, guys, for being here. Happy you decided to join us. I have a little announcement that BBS Radio wants me to make. They want to let you know that they've made some upgrades to the station. They now have multiple streams on each station now. They have a 64K primary stream, 24K alternative stream, and also a 56K alternative stream that people can use. And obviously, Allison doesn't know what any of that means, but they felt it was pretty important that you all should know, because I'm clueless. And both stations also have a full conference line that audience can dial into when they wish to hear the programming on their phone, so you can actually listen in on your phones. And a lot of people seem to really like this feature. So there's more ways than ever to connect to BBS. So they wanted to let you know. I'm going to give out the numbers for Station 1 and in the event that some of you might want to tune in. The toll-free number is 888-815-9756, and that's USA and Canada. You can also call in at 530-327-7602, 530-776-5185, and 530-413-4522. So I guess you can call in on those lines and listen into the show, and there you go. And I have a really wonderful guest this evening. He's been on the show a couple of times before, a very popular guest, an extremely interesting guy. He's got a lot of insight and wisdom to share. My guest this evening is Dr. Kevin Ross Emery, and he splits his time between New England and Arizona, maintaining a private practice for focusing on spiritual coaching and counseling. He also teaches Wai Chi, Tibetan Reiki, alternative approaches for dealing with attention deficit disorder, and also he teaches on medical intuition. Although he didn't begin his full-time practice until 1991, Dr. Kevin Ross Emery was actually a professional psychic in the 70s. He spent 12 years working, also getting degrees in business, where he blended his psychic abilities with his abilities to train, troubleshoot, manage, and create systems and industries from banking to hotels to retail. His last 20 years has fine-tuned his practice as a coach, counselor, medical intuitive, and author, with several books to his credits, while earning a master's and doctorate in divinity. He is the author of four books, The Lost Steps of Reiki, Experiment Earth, Combing the Mirror, and Managing the Gift, and also alternative approaches for attention deficit disorder. He also has 7 DVDs through the Spiritual Development Series, covering topics such as Am I Psychic?, Ghost, Reincarnation, Pendulum, The Key to Prosperity, The Lost Steps of Reiki, Dream Interpretation, and also a CD on Managing the Gift, Daily Practices. Dr. Kevin also is a radio host. He hosts the show Outside the Box on Web of Light Radio, and he also hosts the show on CBS Sky Radio. So, you know, we're just delighted to have him all around, a very talented, very wise, very insightful guy, and I'm going to welcome him to the show. Hi, Dr. Kevin. How are you?
You know, I am so fabulous. I can't stand it, and it usually means that no one around me can stand me either. How are you?
Oh, wonderful. Well, my dear, you are fabulous. I mean, you're just amazing. I love you. I mean, you're one of my favorite guests.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. One of these days, I'm going to have you do my numbers for me. You know, you've never done my numbers for me. Every time I go on your show, I always think, you know, I should never do my numbers.
Well, I can just demonstrate to you just how incredibly fabulous I am and insightful and wise, and I'd be happy to do that anytime, my dear. Just give me a buzz. I want to refer everyone, while you're listening to the show, please feel free to hop on over and take a look at Dr. Kevin's website. It's www.weboflight.com. And you can also find that information on the front page of BBS Radio. Just go to visiblebynumbers.com. Click on that and scroll, and you'll be able to see all of his information there and certainly the links to his website. So check it out while you're listening. And, yes, I'd love to do your numerology just so that I can figure you out entirely.
Ah, well, you know that there are two levels of fabulous. And, of course, we both fall into that. And so you don't have to do anything to prove you're fabulous to me, but I just, you know, there is fabulous one and there's fabulous two. And do you know what the difference is?
No, pray tell, inform me. What is the difference?
The difference is fabulous one, you only throw one arm up in the air when you say it, and fabulous two, you throw both arms up in the air when you say it.
Okay, well, I will remember that.
Just don't be holding a phone if you do a double fabulous.
Excuse me, I've got to do a double fabulous right now, so I'm going to drop you, okay? I could drop my phone. Listen, my dear, we've had you on the show. We had an incredible show when we discussed your approach to a test, ADHD, and that was a fabulous show. And we've also had you on, and we've discussed pendulum and psychic development. And when we discussed your coming on the show this evening, I asked you, well, what do you want to talk about? And you messaged me back something about coming out of the closet. So do you want to explain me what are we talking about tonight, Kev? What's going on?
Well, you know, the first thing is there is no closet in the universe that's ever been big enough to hold me. I do have a radio show that I have been doing for the last 6 months for one of the places, because I have radio shows all over. I have Web of Light Radio, IPM Nation, CBS, New Sky Radio, Blog Talk.
You're a busy boy.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, it's interesting. I'm actually cutting back. I was doing 5 radio shows a week, and plus specials. And the interesting thing is that I had launched one, which actually I'm bringing to a close. It was called Out of the Closet with Dr. Kevin, where we were bringing issues out of the closet that people don't want to talk about.
Mm.
And the thing is when we allow things to stay in the closet, then they always win, and we get hung up there, whether that's alternative healing, an alternative way of being in the world, whether that's about sexuality, whether that's about religion, whatever it's about.
Mm-hmm.
And I just finished up the show by doing a 9-part death series with Radical Mama Mary Grace McManus out of Seattle and Olivia Stefanino, who is the author of Be Your Own Guru out of Manchester, England. And we did a 9-part death series where we took death out of the closet and we talked about it. Why are we so afraid of it? And what's going on? And we talked about the death. We talked about the death of a person. We talked about the death of a relationship. We talked about the death of self. We talked about assisted suicide. We talked about, you know, suicide and how it affects, and how do you deal with death if somebody that you know has been murdered. And so we did 9 shows in a row taking death out of the closet.
Well, you know, I've often said, you know, one of my major, you know, I guess if I could get on my bandwagon and stump away, I really feel that we spend little, if any, time preparing people for death, whether it's a loved one, a death in the family, or maybe the multiple different other things that you discuss. Zero, zip, nada, nothing. Because it's not a comfortable thing to discuss, and yet, ultimately, we're all going to die. And it seems to me that teaching about death should be just as much as teaching about living. It's equally as important. And I think that helps people to perhaps better able to handle it when it does happen. So I've often felt like there's so many things that in, you know, our education, that is a subject that is never talked about until it's sitting right in front of you and it's happened to you, you know?
And one of the things, and I was somebody that was brought up and had a lot of death going on throughout my childhood and into my early adult years. And, you know, and astrologically I have a lot of Scorpio in my chart, so death and I aren't strangers by a long shot. But one of the things that the points in the show, and we're actually going to be taking this series and we're going to be adding a few things and we're actually going to be releasing it as a series that people can buy, a death series. because it's way past time that we had something out there where people were having honest and frank conversations about it. But one of the things, Allison, is all life is a series of deaths and rebirths. Mm-hmm. And so there is, there's the death, rebirth. And because we are so afraid of death, it's what makes us so afraid of change, because change is a form of death.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And so,
I think.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
But
well, I think people are so intent on hanging on to something with both hands because they are afraid of change. Whereas if they just realized that it's kind of like if you have a room and you want to get new furniture, you got to get rid of the old in order to bring in the new. You know, you have to be more flexible, adaptable, and ready to embrace change. I mean, I think live life fearlessly is really the way that I would kind of, you know, recommend for people to do, not to be afraid of anything, because all of it is just a series of growth.
And, you know, and it's really funny because in dealing with all of these different issues and suicide and abortion, and I mean, like, we threw everything out of the closet. That's why it took 9 weeks.
Ah.
We threw everything out of the closet. And we try to keep the show at a half an hour, but because it was an internet show that actually people put, you know, that we release it through places that don't have defined time slots. Sometimes it went on 45 minutes. Sometimes it went on 50 minutes. I know that my editors were going crazy with me, and they were trying to cut it down. And I said, well, tell me what we said that was cuttable. And they were, like, scratching their head, like, it's all good. I'm like, well, that's my point.
Right.
You know, I mean,
right.
Of course, you know, you always have on a radio show a couple of minutes here or there if you really want to ruthlessly edit. But, you know, why? Why? This information needs to get out there. And that we need to embrace change, embrace death as part of the living process. We need to stop making it scary. We need to stop putting stuff out there of, you know, Graham or Gramp gets sick and they get carted away somewhere and you never see them again. Or, you know, oh, you never want to take a child to a funeral. It will, you know, scar them for life. It scars them for life to not take them to a funeral.
Because
they're going to have to go through one at some point, even if it's just their own. You know, so it's like, get a clue. What made us so afraid of death?
Well,
it's
an uncomfortable subject. It's an uncomfortable subject. It's not talked about. It's taboo, you know. It's kind of like, okay, let me just reiterate this. I recently received a book from a lady whose son died of cancer at the age of 9, and she wrote this incredible book about his journey from birth until his death and what he taught her. And as I was reading the book, I was overwhelmed with sadness, compassion, love, incredible love of this child, the amazing child that he was. And yet there was this beautiful, incredible, inspirational message in it all. And when I was done, I thought to myself, everyone should read this book. But I can't imagine a lot of people saying, gee, I'm going to go out and relax on the deck and read this book about this kid dying of cancer, because it's a difficult subject. It's something that it's not all that feel good to delve into, you know, her psyche and his psyche going through this process of all this illness and his ultimate death. It's just something that we kind of put in the closet, we avoid, because it invokes within you emotions and thoughts, and even your own mortality comes up in your thoughts as you're reading a book like that. You know what I'm saying?
Well, so, you know, I mean, and part of it may be, look, maybe it doesn't bother me because I'm never going to die. My body will go away.
Sure.
My soul lives forever.
Exactly.
My body just gets traded in for a new set of clothes, a new set of experiences, a new set of opportunities. And I know that to be true. So therefore, I do not fear death. I fear leaving life before I have completed my commitments. I know what I came in to do in this lifetime. I have figured out what I am here to do. I'm living my joy. I get paid. I get recognized to do my joy, to be me. And on my gravestone, it will say he died living.
Mm-hmm. True.
And we need to get people to that point where they realize that of, hey, I came in to do this. This is what I'm doing. And in doing that and being fully me and being out there in the world, I need not fear death. because it will just mean, oh, I finished this part of an adventure, and the next adventure is waiting for me. And I'm going to tell you why we're afraid of death. We're afraid of death because of traditional religions. Traditional religions have made us afraid of death, because all of the ancient pagan religions celebrated death. Yes, it was lost. You were going to miss the person in the physical form, but the person was still going to be alive in the ground and the trees and the memories. I mean, I just had to do a session with a young boy who's struggling because his grandmother's dying and the family's falling apart, and he's young and he's not sure how to deal with all of this. And when I sat down and I put my hand on his heart and I looked at him and I said, till the day you die and you tell loving stories about your grandmother, she will never be dead. You will keep her alive in your heart. And so will everybody she touched. And then I reached out and I said to him, did your dad ever tell you about anybody who that you never met that died? Yeah, my great-grandfather. He was in World War I, and he was a pilot. Did you ever tell anybody that story? Yeah. I said, so your great-grandfather hasn't died. You never met him, but you've kept him alive. They live on in your heart. They live on in our memories. They live on in what they gave to us that we give to other people.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
The kid got it.
Well, also, I think, going back, I want to take you back to traditional religion as well. I personally think
only
that
kicking
when
and
you
screaming.
Hang,
oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
When you hang on to people, purgatory and hell, and paying for all your sins and all that, excuse me, load of crap, that also makes people afraid of dying, because they're like, oh my God, maybe I wasn't good enough. Maybe I'm going to burn in hell. Maybe, you know, and I think that because there's the guilt factor that has to be dumped on people. When that isn't what God is about, that isn't what, well, God or whatever it is that you want to call it, source, or it doesn't matter what you name it, it isn't what being a soul is, it isn't what being a spiritual is, it isn't any of that. You know, you're here, there is no right and wrong, and I think that putting that head trip on people, and that goes back to conventional religions, I think that's another reason why people fear death. You know, because they've been, you know, this song and dance about, you know, eternal damnation or punishment. And I think that's totally a shame, an absolute travesty, actually.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that was one of my points. We are being taught and brainwashed to fear death because we are raised from cradle to tomb to believe in most major religions that we came in inadequate. We came in having to grovel for some kind of forgiveness from birth, that we were born inadequate, instead of teaching we were born adequate beyond belief, as Marianne Williamson says. We were born to be larger than the life they gave us, because we are the continuation of life.
Right.
And people don't get that.
No,
they're
don't.
Not told that. They're told where they're lacking, where they're wrong, where they're bad. They're told that they're not tall enough, or they're not thin enough, or they're not pretty enough, or they're not strong enough, or they're not fast enough. And then religion puts in your head, you were born a sinner, and you're going to spend your whole life, and you're going to do your best, and at the end of the day, a coin will be tossed. Mm. And they'll decide in heaven, did you do good enough to have eternal life, or are you and the marshmallows both getting roasted?
Right. Well,
how can we not be afraid of death when this is a permeating ideology in our culture?
Right. I just want to say that when I was a small child, I was went to parochial school, so it was very much part of my upbringing. And I can remember sitting in a Catholic church and hearing the story of Adam and Eve and the original sin, and how the rest of us, you know, we were no good because of what they did. We had this horrible sin, and that we were banished to this earth and all this other stuff. And yet, at the same time, I was hearing stories about God and His love. And in my heart, I knew that what love was. And if you love somebody, you don't test them. If you love somebody, there is no, you have to worship me. If you love somebody, you wouldn't punish them for something that somebody did that they don't even know, and that person did that eons ago, according to their story, and yet God is so pissed that he's going to punish me, you know, how many hundreds of millions of years later because of something Adam and Eve did in the garden. And I thought, well, if that's God, I don't like him very much. And I thought, if that's God, I'm not talking to him. And so somewhere around 7 or 8 years old, I decided I didn't like God. But I had to put up with the parochial schools. I had to put up with the parochial, you know, upbringing. I couldn't understand why I have to go to, you had to go to confession. Can you imagine, and I'm sorry, but can you imagine a child, and you're getting ready for First Holy Communion, and before you can do that, you have to go and confess your sins to a priest. So I am being forced to go into this place, and I didn't know what I had sinned. So I went down the list of what they told us were sins, and I made up stuff so that I could go to confession. And, you know, I was forced into all of it. And to me, if you've got something that you're sorry for, why do I have to go through a human being to talk to God? If he's in my heart, if he's in this church, if he's everywhere else, this is what you're also teaching me, why do I have to go through this priest to ask for forgiveness? None of it made any sense to me. Okay? And that was me as a child. So you can imagine my life. It's always been in search of the truth.
See, and I was raised in a situation that when my grandmother died and came to me at night at my bed and stood there and said, "You still need me. I haven't gone anywhere." And I woke up the next morning and my mother comes in and says, "Your Grammy died last night." And she's crying. And I go, "What's for breakfast?" And I'm like 8 years old and she's thinking I don't understand death. And she walks out. And I remember laying in that bed thinking, "Mommy doesn't get it. Grammy hasn't gone anywhere."
Right.
Grammy hasn't gone anywhere.
Well, that's true. And people don't understand what death is at all. It isn't a death. Actually, we should celebrate our death because, you know, then it's all new beginnings. It's going back home. To me, being on this planet is like being E.T. trying to find out how to get back home. You know, because when you're home, you belong in spirit. This is three-dimensional, you know, place that you are, but it's not your home. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yep. And I don't agree with you, but that doesn't make any difference. I don't have to.
You don't agree with me regarding?
I don't agree with you because one of the things, Allison, and maybe it's just semantical here, and maybe you'll never have me on again, but I doubt that because I know how much
That's okay.
more wise
no,
you are than
I'm
that.
I'm all for diversity of opinion. Hey.
We have a choice when we come to this planet. We can have hell on earth with some heavenly moments, or we can have heaven on earth with some hellish moments. And when people say to me, like, what is the resurrection, or what is the heaven on earth, or what do? It's like when we get 6 billion people that are running around being 100% uniquely who they are on this planet, we will have earth on this planet, and we don't need to go anywhere else. I'm tired of hearing how somehow we don't belong here. We belong here, but we need to take it back and make it ours. I'm tired of the negative, naysaying, controlling, patriarchal church and governments taking my planet away from me, and I'm not running, and I'm not hiding. I'm here. It's my planet. Give it back. You screwed it up.
Well, I can't say as though I disagree with you, so I don't really know where our disagreement is, but... perhaps I was inept in what I said.
No, I wasn't inept.
I agree with you that when you're living your joy and fully expressing what it is that you came to do, life is beautiful. It is incredibly beautiful. Incredibly. And for me, my purpose is that journey to seek out the truth regarding the origins of where I came from. And for me, the beauty is being able to be fully connected with Source while living in the physical world and implementing that, because that is my greatest joy. And so for me, in a way, it is like E.T. trying to phone home, because that is my greatest joy. To me, if I could, you know, some people you could say, what would you like? And they might want, you know, to make a multi-million-dollar deal and be rich. For me, it is having that beautiful meditation and that beautiful connection to spirit, that is better than all the money in the world to me. So I think, you know, in a way, maybe being a little inept in how I expressed it, but I think you and I agree 100% on the same thing about this. You can create this heaven on earth.
And that's why, and that's why I said some of it was semantical. And one of the reasons I needed to say that was because there is a whole spiritual New Age tradition that has sprung up that is out there that really does preach. And I knew that you really weren't saying that, but it was just the way you said it. It was like, okay, there is this side, and it's out there, and I'm here to get in that view of the world's face that says, well, you know what? You don't feel at home here because this isn't home. You'll never feel at home here. When somebody comes to me and says, well, you know, I just have to suffer through being here because I'll never feel home on Earth, I'll go, well, that's your choice. Why don't you get off now so you can make room for somebody who can find joy on this planet? Because, you know, you're taking up resources. We don't really need you.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. I get you. I agree. Because I think so many people are not expressing their true selves. They're not. And therefore, there comes the unhappiness. And I believe that if you're truly in your joy, you create joy. And no matter what it is that you're here to do, whether it's mother children, create, build buildings, be an artist, whatever, be a spiritual teacher such as yourself, it doesn't matter. Just express, take that energy that you have and express it. And be it. And be it fully.
And honey, it is, to me, and I will go toe-to-toe with any of these spiritual leaders that are out there preaching, oh, you're on the wrong planet, you're not in the right place, of course it's okay for you to feel that way. That's the coward's way out. Don't be a coward. Be courageous. You chose to come into this planet. You have as much right to it as anyone else. Make it yours. Own it. Do your work. And get your head out of the cowardly excuse of, oh, my soul doesn't belong here. If your soul didn't belong here, you wouldn't be here. Now get over it and do your work and have the courage to do it and stop running around in this mumbo-bumbo, fluffy spiritual, give me an excuse to not have to look reality in the face and say, you know what? If I've got a crappy life, it's because I created it. I need to take responsibility over it, and I need to change it because I have the power in me to do that because I am God and Goddess on Earth. And you don't get to tell me that I get to make excuses to get out of here and not do my work.
Well, I think you found your passion, my dear.
Well,
and
speaking of which,
I do.
One of my new passions, I have a couple of new passions I want to make sure that I share, though I love having these conversations with you, is I have started a new series of retreats.
Oh, good.
Called...
Tell us about it.
Journey to Greatness. And I'm working on a new book. I'm working on two new books right now. One is my sequel to my ADD book that I'm working on, Managing the Gift of Your ADD-ADHD Child, which will be followed by the ADHD Entrepreneur and then the Spouse. So I've got all four of those somewhere in my head in process that I'm working on. And then I'm working on a new book also called Good Settles, Greatness Soars. And if any of you listeners want to go to Greatness Soars, and that's three S's, greatnesssoars.com, you're going to see that I've been called to change the work I'm doing. And I'm leaving behind the old work that I used to do, and I'm stepping up to the plate. Spirit has tapped me and said, okay, we're moving you upstairs. We want you to do this new level of work. And what I came to, what came to me, and it really was one of those epiphany moments in my life that I seem to be blessed with lots of them throughout my life, of realizing that oftentimes when we become great at something, we hide behind being great at something and never finish the journey to our greatness. We become a caricature of ourselves, and we become defined by what we were great at. And the most current example that's been on everyone's lips lately is Tiger Woods was a great golfer, but that didn't make him a good human. It didn't make him a good spouse, or it doesn't make him a good partner. It doesn't mean that he's not wounded and hurt inside, or there's a part of him that obviously is being driven by some feeling of inadequacy. But as long as he could hide behind the caricature Tiger Woods, the person who was larger than life in their greatness on the golf field, he got away with doing his work. And we see that all the time. Somebody becomes great at something, and it ends up destroying them sooner or later because we think they get a pass on becoming fully human.
Mm-hmm.
And that started me writing. I'm like in the throes of writing Good Settles, Greatness Soars. And I've created these sets of retreats to help people. And, you know, for 20 years, and before that, I was a professional psychic in the 70s, like you said at the beginning. Then I went to corporate for 12 years because that's where spirit led me. So I got all these practical and pragmatic skill sets to bring back to the spiritual world. Now, for almost 20 years, I've been doing the spiritual coaching and counseling and integrating everything and always doing them as one thing, never separate. They were always one thing to me. You can't ever really get to core issues if you're working with just a coach or just a counselor. There has to be an integration, and you have to be using your intuitive gifts, and you have to be guiding people, and all of you needs to be present to do that. And then recently, I realized that my work had shifted up, and I now call it synergistic catalyst, because I go in and I go through all of the areas in somebody's life. I mean, their business, their career, their passion, who are they here to be, their emotional, their mental, all of it. In fact, what I've done is I've identified a dozen different areas where, as I work with somebody, I go and assess, where are you? Where do you think you're capable of? Where do I think you're capable of? And how do you take that journey to greatness in all of those different areas? And greatness isn't ever assessed by that the outside world says you're the greatest golfer or the greatest dad or the greatest mom, but it's by knowing that you have achieved your greatness in that area. You have become fully who you are.
And how do you define greatness? I mean, because, okay, all right, using Tiger Woods as an example, obviously, and using the word greatness in association with him, it's reaching a certain pinnacle of success, okay? Whether there's fame or fortune or whatever comes with that. So the average everyday person that you have certainly people, I feel, that are destined for greatness. You have people that have special purpose, that have, you know, there's something that they're definitely here to do. But I do think that there are things like an absolutely gifted beyond belief great mother who is the cosmic nurturer, the guardian of the children, whose job, not job, but whose purpose for the soul came to do nothing more than be a great mom. I mean, to me, greatness is an overrated word because I think that there are great people that, you know, it's almost like they walk among us, but they're not acknowledged for their greatness. I think greatness is, it comes in extreme many areas. I don't think that you need fame or fortune or any of that stuff in order to be great. And so I kind of get all kind of caught up in the word greatness itself. I think greatness, really, we don't place enough emphasis on teachers. There are teachers that have taught for 40 years and sent children out into the world, giving them the skills to go on with further education, and also while they're at it, teaching them to be kind, to be good, to manners, or whatever the case might be, and they've never been acknowledged for being great teachers, but they were epitome of greatness. So I take exception with the word greatness. I mean, is that,
and,
what is the definition?
And you're welcome to, and I'd be more than happy to give you a definition when you finish taking exception.
Okay.
Boy, I know when I push someone's buttons on this show. You heard me say that I was associating greatness with fame and fortune. I used a reference of somebody who was famous so people could understand the reference. No one can deny that he became a great golfer. I don't care if he never became famous. I don't care if he never became successful. No one can deny he was a great golfer. Becoming successful and famous meant that he hid behind being a great golfer to not develop those parts of his life and the areas of his life where he was wounded or he was hurt or he was insecure, that he could be a better person by becoming the person he's here to be. Now, I'm going to take exception to something you said, which is somebody can be a great teacher, and I think the teachers don't get the recognition. I've been on many shows talking about, you know, really, you know, what does it say and what do we role model to our kids with where we spend our dollars and who do we bring up to the sky? That's one of my favorite soapboxes to get on. But you can still be a great teacher who puts all of your time and energy into being a great teacher and helping tons of kids. And, yeah, there should be an acknowledgement or reward, but I don't think that's what it's about. It's they were living their passion and joy. They got rewarded by what they were doing. Should they get paid more? Well, that's a different conversation. Yeah, they should, but that's not relevant to the conversation I'm trying to have. But that great teacher can go home and maybe spend their whole life in a dysfunctional marriage or never getting married or never feeling like they were good at anything else and living a very arid existence in every other area of their life, and that is unnecessary. We do not have to sacrifice all of who we are to be great at one thing. We are all capable of greatness, and to me, greatness is living up to your capability in every area of your life, being the best teacher, mom, dad, CEO, golfer, whatever your passion is, whatever your purpose is, that you come and you never stop and hide behind the fact that you became a great teacher or a great CEO or a great golfer or a great movie star or a great bricklayer. You could be the most fabulous artisan bricklayer that built a beautiful cathedral, but you went home every night and drank yourself into insensibility because you were a miserable person inside. The journey to greatness is the journey to becoming you. Huh?
So your definition of greatness is how I would define greatness, that it is taking your energy, whatever it may be, and being good at all aspects of that particular energy, which is basically kind of what you're saying. It goes beyond what you do that made
absolutely
you great, but it's also every other avenue of your life and being. Is that correct?
We punish people who become great at very visible things by finding other places where we can tear them down because we're jealous of them. That's why we do horrible things to, you know, I mean, I went to the movies yesterday and I saw Robin Hood, and Cate Blanchett is a fabulous actress. That's one of her gifts. That's one of her purposes. I've seen her in several things, and I always am amazed at her intensity and her ability to perform. But what do we do with people like that? We hound them. We try to find ugly pictures of them to put on newspapers. We try to find gossip we can put out, and we lie about them, and we tear them down. And so out there, that greatness is what I was saying earlier before I brought up Good Settle's greatness soars, is being 100%, as close as you can get, being 100% who you are here to be. That is greatness.
And
it's being fully you.
Right, and that's discovering your authentic self, which I think is something that most people, this is my feelings, okay, so I'm just going to go with this. That as we grow up and as we try to acclimate to society, we want to fit in and we want to be loved. So we listen to our parents and we listen to our teachers and we listen to our friends and perhaps somebody we worked with or our boss or our mentors or whatever the case might be. And everyone's got an opinion and everyone's got some advice and everybody's telling you do this, do that or whatever. And somewhere along the way, we lose our authentic self and we try to fit in. And we try to do what's the right thing, and we try to behave like everybody else in society. And, you know, it's like something as silly as walking into a toy store and seeing a toy that's incredibly funny, but you're an adult, and it isn't normal for an adult to wind that toy up and dance with it. But, yeah, it's an incredibly funny toy, and you really should be dancing with a toy because you have joy in your heart. But we, because we want to fit into society, God forbid that you would act like an idiot in a toy store. So there's all these little subliminal rules all over the place about what is the correct behavior. And somewhere in all of that muck, we lose our authentic selves, and we're miserable because then we don't even spend the time trying to discover who we are. We don't spend the time thinking who we are because we're too busy working to support ourselves, to put food on our table and a roof over our heads and all the other things that come in with it. And so many, many people don't even take the time to discover or sit down with themselves and say, who am I? What does make me happy? Why am I not doing what makes me happy?
And after 20 years of working with people to try to heal them to the point that they can even ask those questions, that's why I say recently, Spirit tapped on me and said, this is your new goal. There are plenty of people out doing what you've been doing for the last 20 years. In fact, one of the messages I got was I had to have 6 to 9 people in place that I had helped, you know, like teach and stuff like this, that were going to pick up the vacancy I was going to leave as I left what I was doing so I can go do this now, that I can move to this point where, because when somebody has really become great at something, even if it's being a great mom, they're always more than a mom. That mother energy doesn't mean that they can't be an artist or a singer, that they can't be a beautiful gardener. And so, you know, it's going in there and it's reintroducing to them to who they were and introducing them to the parts of themselves they never got a chance to meet before they were stolen by society. And next time I'm in the Philly area, go to a toy store with me, honey. You'll run out embarrassed what I want at a toy store. And I'm sure you don't find that hard to believe at all. I had somebody that came to my house not too long ago. I had a few people over, and it was somebody that was kind of like a blind date type of situation for me. They asked to use the bathroom. The bathroom that most people use was busy, so I let him use my bathroom in my bedroom. And when they walked through my bedroom, they saw that I had a huge teddy bear and a couple of other little teddy bears on my bed. And when they came out, they were like, you know, I could see them like looking, because I showed them like, oh, the bathroom's in there or whatever, and I could see them kind of looking at them. They came out, they kind of made this little comment that was kind of like, you know, isn't it kind of strange for a grown professional, you know, like man like you to be sleeping with teddy bears? And I looked and I said, teddy bears is the only thing that's going to be sleeping in my bed tonight, honey, because if you don't get my teddy bears, you can't be sleeping in my bed. Now, I never told this person that when I do long-distance healing work on somebody, that sometimes I will use a teddy bear as just as like a focal point. Because I didn't have to, because I don't have to explain myself. I didn't need to explain myself. I like my teddy bears.
Right, exactly.
I will be 50 years old on July 4th this year. And I sleep with a couple of teddy bears in my bed because I like them, and I don't have to explain that to anybody.
And you know what? It's okay by me too, sweetie, because, you know, I'm all for your teddy bears, okay? And personally myself, like I say, and in the expression of who you are, I think also, too, one of the biggest problems or with people that I find through my practice is that they have a tendency to place an incredible amount of weight on what other people think, where they should be placing the emphasis on what they think. It's about how they define themselves. And what they have to learn to do, and I often say this to people, is you need to have this, like, mental garbage can. And when people open their mouths and they pretend to give you advice or tell you something that isn't in alignment with who you are, you have to kind of, it's almost like consider the source. You have to take those words and put it in a garbage can and go back to seeking your own counsel to who you are authentically and loving yourself, celebrating yourself, embracing yourself, and being yourself. You can't be anyone else but you because everyone else is taken. So celebrate who you are and don't worry about what anybody else thinks. It's only what you think that matters.
And one of the, and you know, and of course, my own version of what you said, I've said myself, you know, hundreds of thousands of times at this point between my years of doing client work and doing shows and doing stuff like this. One of the problems is that they don't know who that is.
Right.
They don't know what
they think.
We said
that earlier.
Yeah, they don't know. And one of the reasons, one of the messages that I got was somebody who has become really great at something has within them the knowledge that they are capable of becoming great at all things, and it's time to tap that. The person who still struggles to find out, to think that there's anything that they're even good at, I've worked with those people for 20 years, and I've got a lot of joy, and I've helped a lot of people in a lot of different ways, and that's great. that's a really good thing. But now, you know, I'm looking, in fact, one of the things that's out there is that, you know, my card says now shaking the movers and shakers. I am working in the pond where I'm affecting the bigger stones that make the more waves. Whether we like it or not, when I work with somebody, like I'm doing more, one of the Journey to Great retreats is called Partnership to Greatness. And again, this is greatnesswords.com. You can find all this information there. But on like the Partnership to Greatness, one of the Partnerships to Greatness is for couples. And then one of them is for business partners or business owners. Because when I take somebody who employs 1,000, 5,000, 10,000 people, and I get them on their journey to greatness, they affect all the way down everybody mm-hmm. in their organization. And we change the culture of the organization, and we change.
Sure.
When, you know, and so when I started getting these messages, because let me tell you, at first when I started getting messages, I thought I was being fired. I'm like, did I do something wrong? I'm like, have I not been doing it right, Spirit? I mean, I've been doing it for like 20 years now. I thought you were pretty happy with the people I helped. What do you mean I got to leave the practice?
Mm-hmm.
But it was that I had to leave the practice I had because now there were people that could be doing what I've done so I can go on and do what I'm supposed to do next. Because
right.
It's interesting. I didn't realize that until somebody actually pointed it out to me using very different languaging that I spent my whole life as an early innovator.
Mm-hmm.
My whole life, I've always been on the cutting edge of something.
Mm-hmm.
I did it in the business world. I did it as a teenager. As a teenager, mm-hmm. Allison. I went in when I realized that I had all the credits I needed to graduate and that I'd already been accepted into a college. I went in and I said, I'm not coming back. I'll be back to pick up my diploma in May. And they said, you can't do that. We don't have early graduation. I said, I have everything I need. I've already been accepted to college. I'm starting classes. You have early graduation now. Tough. And I walked out. I was 17 years old. I walked out. I went back in May and got my thing. The next year, that school had early graduation, and within 2 years, every school in the state had early graduation. They didn't have it till I walked in and said, this is stupid. I'm not coming back. I've got everything I need. That story describes my whole life.
Well, you know, I think in a way that we're a little bit of two of a kind because I can go back to my high school days when girls were not allowed to wear pants to school, and I was living in upstate New York, and let me tell you, honey, it was cold in the winters, but we were allowed to wear pants to school, but once we were at school, we had to change into our skirt dress or whatever the heck it was, and it was ridiculous when it was, you know, 10 below outside, so we refused to about six of us got together and decided one day, we can learn wearing a pair of pants just as well as we can learn wearing a dress. And so we went to class in our pants, at which point we were promptly pulled out of class and sent home to change. And the next day we arrived at school and did the same thing over and over and over and over, and we kept making the point that what difference does it make what I have on my body? I'm here to learn. And I like to think that I was an innovator in allowing women to wear pants to school because within 1 year it was allowed to wear pants to school. So there you go. Not the same thing, but sort of.
Well, you know, and that's just it is when you're an early innovator, and I needed somebody else because sometimes we need somebody else to language it for us to hear it because we do what mm-hmm. we do without thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't think. I never thought of myself as an early innovator. And then when I was talking to this guy, who actually somebody that I brought in to work with myself and my key people in my organization to set up our 18 to 36 month business strategy of how to mm-hmm. take the business to the next level so that I was out there touching more people and doing more of the work that I felt like I was being drawn to shift to.
Sure.
And so, you know, and of course I always laugh that the whole reason that I've had a successful spiritual business for 20 years is because I've run it as a business.
Sure.
Because it is a business.
It is.
It's a business that has a spiritual vision and mission statement that does a lot of good, and it's done a lot of good because I ran it as a business.
Sure. Well, you, in order to reach, you know, I always say that in order, you have to be able to market yourself and what it is that you do in order to reach people, because it doesn't matter how much wisdom and insight you have to offer.
You can't offer it from your living room. You have, your name has to be known. People have to know enough that this is someone I can contact. It looks like what they have to offer is something that I could use. And so therefore you have to be able to put on two hats. You have to be the spiritual teacher, guru, or whatever it is that you want to call it. And you also have to have the business hat in order to market yourself. Otherwise you don't have clients. And if you don't have clients, what's the point? You know, you can, you know, all that wisdom and insight goes to, you know, the wayside. So, yeah, it has to be run. And that's not an easy thing to do, especially for someone like yourself, because I'm sorry, I'm intuitive, I'm psychic, whatever you want to call it. You are, you know, that's a little airy-fairy sometimes. Sometimes it's very, you know, it seems to me as though you have some really practical skills, and also a great deal of business background that is very helpful for you. But I think sometimes with people that, because when you look at that energy, it is a little bit more difficult to rein it in. And I think you really must have done a marvelous job, you know, reining in that aspect of you in order to create the business that you have.
Well, it's interesting because I always remembered that when it was time for me to you know, I stumbled into being a psychic when I was like 16 and did professional psychic work at that time. You know, interestingly enough, making $25 for a half an hour back in the 70s, so $50 an hour, I was making more than my parents were making. Not that they ever knew that, because I never knew I was getting paid, because I wouldn't have told them. Different story for a different day. But anyways, I, you know, had put that money aside and, you know, and indulged myself in the things that were important to me at the time. And, but my mother, because, you know, all of the psychic stuff ran and on my father's side of the family back several generations. And my mother, for my mother, it was very important to be normal. And she really pushed me, her and my stepfather really pushed me, that I needed to go have a real job, a real life, be a real person, do all of these things. And I chose business. And in fact, at the beginning, I started in accounting. I mean, and the most diametrically opposed to what my true nature was. But I chose it because it challenged me. And it was like, I said, okay, well, I can do two things. I can go become a car mechanic, and I have no desire or passion or any idea of ever putting my head under the hood of a car. Don't ever ask me to change oil. And I have AAA, so I don't have to change a tire. I mean, this works for me. That, therefore, my other choice for me, and I wasn't interested in being a medical doctor, because back then, I always had some issues with traditional Western medicine. I just didn't know what they were. So I was like, well, I need to go in the business world so I can make enough money so I can always have somebody to stick their head under the hood of my car that likes doing that, because I don't. And, you know, and it ended up being very interesting that I was actually very good at it, and I was very good at it because it challenged me to learn, and I was always using my intuitive.
Earlier in the program, you said, Allison, look, you know, someday I want you to look at my numbers. Now, Kevin Ross Emery, that is your name on your birth certificate?
K-E-V-I-N, yep, R-O-S-S-E-M-E-R-Y, it sure is.
Right, okay, just really quick assessment. Your expression, which says, this is what I'm here to do, this is spiritual teacher. This is teacher. But also, this is not related to just the United States of America. This is worldwide. And you're here to make a contribution to humanity. And so you're here to change the world. When you look at your heart's desire, which is another aspect of your chart, this is someone that's extremely ambitious. This is also someone that is an innovator, a leader, someone that thinks, really, is the actual words are out of the box, okay? Your heart's desire is a one. And also your consonant is, your consonants are all saying personality, business, a problem solver, efficiency expert, somebody that really should rise to the top, somebody that belongs in charge. So you've got a lot of energy that's talking ambition, but the direction and where you take that ambition is the spiritual, based upon what your expression number is. So this whole conversation and everything that we've been saying, you know, and to finish up the interview by actually validating through your numerology everything that you've been saying. So there's a little bit of it. And as much as I hate to say it, you know, as charming as you are, even when we were slightly going head-to-toe, I had a really wonderful evening, but it's come to an end, and I have to say goodnight.
Allison, as always, it's wonderful talking, debating, even sparring with you, because I respect you. thank you for doing those numbers for me. At some point, we're going to have to talk, because next time you have me on, we're going to talk about the university that I'm founding so that we can get recognition for outside-of-the-box stuff, the recognition we deserve, which we've never received. So that can be our next show, and we can talk about where you fit in that vision.
Okay, sweetie. Well, I just want to remind everybody, Kevin, what is the Greatness site again? Give that to our listeners.
It's Greatness Soars, G-R-E-A-T-N-E-S-S-S. So there's three S's, Greatness Soars. And people can get a look at these week-long retreats. It starts with a Journey to Center retreat that I do with my partner, Dara Jane. And then after that, they're all one-on-one or two-on-two. Very, very intense work for people that are like, I'm ready to step into who I'm here to be. If that's
okay.
What your mantra is, these retreats are for you.
Wonderful. And also I'd like to remind everybody to also visit Dr. Kevin's website, theweboflight.com. Dr. Kevin, thank you so much for being on.
Allison, a joy as always.
I appreciate you. And have a wonderful evening. And for everyone that was listening, thank you so much for tuning in to Visible by Numbers. I'll be back again next week. Going to be doing some numerology and some readings, so make sure you tune in then. And in the meantime, everyone, have a wonderful evening and abundant blessings. Good night, everyone.
Thank you for joining us this evening. For more information, or if you wish to contact Allison for a reading, please visit www.visiblebynumbers.com or email Allison at alynch@ptd.net. Have a wonderful evening and be well.